All right, Erev Tov, good evening. We're looking at chapter 2, Perek Bet of Book of Ruth. I want to make one dedication in memory of my Rav from London. This Yotzeit was this Shabbos Gimel Iyar of David Cooper, who was really a very special man. Someone who's a great Talmud Chacham, someone who's a very big honor, very modest individual, but really was a major scholar. And really special individual. I'm very thrilled that, you know, when we talk about Gedolim, we sometimes have them amongst us, and we just don't get to recognize them until they're gone. And this is the case with Rabbi Cooper, very, very unusual individual, and very, very much missed in his community and around the world. A lot of Talmidim in different places. I also want to dedicate the learning for Refuah Shleima for the people who were affected yesterday in that terrible bombing. We still don't know what the story is, and one wonders what exactly it's all about, but there are a lot of people really suffering terribly at the moment, and let's hope that in the zechut of what we're going to learn, they will merit a speedy recovery, because they definitely, a lot of them need it. In terms of what we're going to do, I just gave out this page, which I want to look at very briefly. I'm going to go through the whole thing. But I just want to look at two things, Section A and Section C. We're looking at the Book of Ruth, Chapter 2. And after last week's introduction, where I tried to steer clear of all the controversy that exists in the book, and I hope, you know, sort of wasn't too disappointing. It's a hard, good evening. It's a tough call. Your books are in the middle here. You just want to grab the page next to the books. I'm just doing a bit of a Hebrew text here. The text I've just given out is taken from the Sefer I mentioned last week, Nachlas Yosef. Nachlas Yosef was written by someone called Yosef Lipowitz. And I mentioned him last week, wrote this really beautiful commentary on the Book of Ruth. Didn't write a lot more. As I mentioned, he was he lived in Israel, lived in Tel Aviv. And he ran some sort of hotel to make a parnasa, but his scholarship was just remarkable. He was also someone who was in Berlin during the period when many of the great names that we know were there, Reb Soloveitchik and Bavitcher Rebbe and various other people. Whether he knew them or not, we're not sure. I don't think we have any record of that. But really a very special man. And you'll see here, just by way of introduction to chapter 2, couple of things that he tells us, which I think we really do need to know. And we're starting on the side where it says Perek Bet. On the right hand side where it's an Aleph. Ulanami Mudal Isha. This is really the first verse of chapter 2, which tells us that Naomi had a relative. Rashi says Muda means a Karov. We'll talk about that word in a minute. A relative, and his name was Boaz, right? And this is the introduction of Boaz. So Rav Lipowitz says like this, and I'm just going to read the paragraph. But Perek Zeh, Matchila Chelek Hasheni Shel Sefer Megillah. So we know this is now part two of the story. Haporeis Lefaneinu, which spreads out in front of us, Ketzad Ishtarshalu Advarim, Sherut Nisa LeBoaz. How did it happen that Ruth and Boaz actually got married? At the end of the day, Ruth is a convert coming back with Naomi, who was disgraced in terms of leaving Eretz Israel. And Ruth represents part of that disgrace because it was the non-Jewish princess that was married to one of the sons. And Boaz represents the sort of the hierarchy of the Jewish community in Israel, the head of the Sanhedrin. He was very respected and everything else. How are these two going to get together? This is of not a likely shidduch. You know, sort of only Simchas or whatever will not be too keen on putting these two together on paper, at least. But we'll see that the hand of God here is very strong. So he says like this, second line at the end. Asher lefi masorit chazal, according to the tradition of the rabbis, Gemara Bava Batra, who has shofet? Ivtzam mibet lechem, he was Ivtzam, we mentioned that last week. From Bethlehem, he was a very famous judge. Fourth line, Barur, mitoch hemshech hadvarim. So we see from the continuation of the story, ki gam acharei shebar rut, Listapech menachlat Hashem. Even after Ruth arrives in Eretz Yisrael, which is what we're going to talk about this evening, Adayan hayarachok ma'od min hamitziyut. It was very far from reality. Just taking that page, learning that. Shemanhig Yisrael, Yikach Lishad, Bat Moab. Is it realistic that a leader of the Jewish people will marry a princess of Moab, which is what she was? She was the daughter of Eglon. Eglon was one of the kings of Moab that we read about in the book of Judges. Because at this point in time, the prohibition against marrying Moabites was in absolute force. And we hadn't yet come to the distinction between men and women. As we know, this is going to be part of what we're going to be talking about this evening. Next line. V'shuv megalelonu anavi ed rikmat astarim shel hashkacha derech maaseim shel bnei adam. And we see all of the hand of God in the hidden parts of the actions of man. Ad she'adavar nimna kam v'aya, until everything comes together the way that we know it does. So that's really by way of introduction. But I wanted to give you a bit of mishpachology. Mishpachology, in other words, what is the family setup? And who exactly are these people that we're learning about? Elimelech was the one that married to Naomi, all right? And what exactly was their relationship? And who is Boaz? So you'll see the next paragraph. Ha-perek matchil b'shayichuto shel Boaz mishpachat Elimelech b'cheskat muda. That Boaz is literally known to the family. What does that mean? Bitui ha-moreh ha-keshe b'shayichut yoteh mikarov. Basically, he's very close. He's someone who is a close relative. Kamosha katubi Yov, and he brings a pasuk in Yov, which we won't go through. Next line, middle of the line. Boaz haya muda kafun. He was actually doubly related. How does that mean? Gam leElimelech v'gam leNaomi. Remember, he's married to Naomi, and he's also, in fact, a brother of Elimelech. Shekachu shiura katub. This is what the verse means. We haven't read it yet, but the first verse. Naomi muda muda lisha. There was a relative of her husband. So what's the family? Just look at this. Underline. You've got Elimelech is brother number one. Salomon is brother number two, who is Avi Boaz, the father of Boaz. So it turns out that Boaz is Elimelech's nephew. Okay? Ploni Almoni, the Hagoel, the brother number three, who we don't even know his name, Mr. Anonymous. And then Va'avi, Naomi, and there was somebody else who was the father of Naomi. All right, and this means that Naomi, being the daughter of this person, was in fact the niece of Elimelech. Okay, so Elimelech married his niece. Naomi and Elimelech, or rather she married her uncle, if you want to put it that way. Yes?
They didn't get this from the text.
No, but this is a rabbinic tradition, actually brought in Rashi. But he brings this here already from rabbinic tradition. Okay, but we know that they're related, but we're not told how. And I think it's important to understand. So Naomi is in fact a niece of Elimelech. She married her uncle, which is allowed in Jewish law. And as a consequence of this, who are they all? Interestingly, Kulam b'nei Nachshon ben Aminadab. And of course, Nachshon ben Aminadab was the guy who jumped into the Red Sea. All right, this is the guy who went up to his neck. So there's an interesting connection here. On top of that, we also know that his sister of Nachshon, Elisheva, married Aaron. So there's a bit of a connection here, family-wise, to Moshe Rabbeinu, if I'm not mistaken. Right? Nachshon had is a sister or a daughter? I've got to think back to the Psukim, Parshat Va'era, in Nachshon ben Aminadav, and
Basanina
Basaminadav. So it's Nachshon's sister. Okay? And that's who it is. So again, it's kind of interesting that you've got here a kind of family connection which goes a bit further than it seems. And what I think is important to appreciate is the immediate connection between Naomi and Elimelech being an uncle marrying a niece, and Boaz coming along as the brother of Elimelech, having now eventually to do something about Naomi, or in essence Ruth's situation. All right, this is going to be a kind of, the word we're going to use is the word Yibum, but it's not the classic case of Yibum. Yibum is the case in the Torah where you have two brothers, one brother dies, and the wife is childless, and the question then is, who has to marry this woman? And the Torah demands that the other brother, the second brother is still alive, should marry her, unless they go through a process called Chalitza. And that's the classic definition of Yibum.
At this point in history,
correct.
And
Correct. And these are the four candidates. That's right. And that's why we'll have the whole discussion in chapter 4 with Ploni Almoni. All right? When he comes from left field. We don't know who he is. And he's so anonymous that he always remains anonymous. We'll never ever know his name. I suppose the rabbis will give us a suggestion. I don't remember now if there is.
All Yibo means is marriage.
Yeah.
It actually means intercourse. It doesn't even mean...
Correct. And we're going to deal with that on that particular story. I'm not going to get to it yet. I'm saving that for another time. So again, just a bit of the language over here. Boaz is called Gibor Chayil, a very strong individual. Yeah.
Now, at that point, you said that Moabite.
Both male and female.
Not marrying, right?
Correct. At this moment, but that's going to change.
Was considered. She was a Moabite.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Now, obviously. I forget which one of the sons she was married to.
Yeah.
There is no, you just said the word, right?
Yeah, there's no condition, there's no connection.
No, there's no,
yeah.
When you're married, you don't have any children.
There was the Yibum.
So what was the problem with the Yibum?
Yeah, so you'll see.
They're doing Yibum, that means they accept them.
Yeah, the answer is that she is accepted, but sort of, as you say in Hebrew, Lemafre, you look back on the circumstance, you'll see what's going to happen here. The whole issue of Moabite converts marrying into the Jewish people is becoming a very big topic at this particular moment in time. Boaz, according to rabbinic tradition, and it's only mentioned rabbinically, but it's very much part of the story, is discussing with his Bet Din this particular issue at this moment. Nothing to do with Ruth, directly, it just came up as their discussion. There were two issues that they were very concerned about at this point in time. Number one was this Moabite marriage thing, which maybe was a bigger issue than just Ruth. There may have been other cases as well. We're not sure. And the other thing was using the name of God in public speech. When we say, how are you, say Baruch Hashem. People never used to speak like that. Because it's taking the name of God and making a blessing in the name of God. We're always careful when we use the name of God. And the question was, could they incorporate the name of God into everyday speech? Something that we do kind of as a natural response. But Boaz and his Bet Din started that particular thing, as we're going to see in chapter 2. So this is all part of the introduction. It's kind of interesting. So hold the thought about Ruth for a minute, because we're going to come back to it. And we'll see something clear.
Was it at this time of history that they've forgotten about
Not necessarily forgotten, but it seems to have gone into some sort of, gray zone. I'm going to call it a gray area. And we're going to come back and we're going to try and deal with it. All right? But hold on to that, because we're going to get there. I just want to show you the paragraph C before we actually learn the chapter, because this is beautiful. This, again, as I said, is Rabbi Lipowitz who wrote this as in such poetic language. It really is breathtaking. He says like this, and it's paragraph C, what I've called the small stuff. Listen to this. L'cha'ora, nechrezu b'perek zeh harbei pratim k'tanim. We're going to read this chapter and say to ourselves, this is very, in Yiddish you say kleinigkeit. Kleinigkeit means it's like small details. What he had for lunch, what she had for lunch. It's strange. Why is this all recorded? Kagon, Devalich, Halichatasha, where did Ruth go? Yeshivata, where did she sit? Achilata, what did she have for lunch? Ukadoma, Ulam. Normally we look for the big stuff, you know, the battle of Jericho, the battle here, the meeting with God, all these sort of major events. The eye of the Almighty can see the greatness of man in the small actions that a person does, your everyday things. Kedivri Chazaz, and he brings the quotes the rabbis. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu notein gedula le'adam. A person does not achieve greatness from God. Ad shebodkeu b'davar katan. Until you're tested with a small thing. Did you greet somebody in the morning? Were you kind? Did you do an act of kindness? Did you, you know, how did you relate to this person? What sort of mitzvah did you do? You know, in a small way. May not even be a mitzvah. And after that, you're raised to greatness. This is said about who? Who do we learn this from? Moshe Rabbeinu. From Moshe. What's the story? Hakshirim l'msirat nefesh, that this is a man who's going to have to give his life for the Jewish people. Lo zachal lehitgalut Hashem. In the end of the day, when does he get the revelation of God in the burning bush? Ela la'achash inivcham b'davar katan b'tzon Yitro. He's walking after some sheep, and the next thing you know, he's speaking to God. So he explains to us that even in something literally as mundane as looking after some animals, that already is a sign. Hashem is looking for that character of that characteristic of the person. Shayano agam b'midbar k'dei l'itrachek min hagezer, because he could see what was Moshe doing, keeping them away from somebody else's field so that they wouldn't steal. They wouldn't eat the other person's produce. But Tahama Shadav, what's the reason? Ki masim gedolim, the great deeds, Shirishumam Nika, which we recognize, Efshah she'etzem godel mo'ofam malhiv et adam, raka masim aputim. In other words, the end of the day could be not the great deeds which are absolutely motivating the person, but really his everyday actions become important. She'ein ro'am ve'ein maricham, that things that we don't normally see. Vaday nasim hei matarat ha'emet, these are done with the purity of truth, the heim heim amidim gam amasim agdolim, and they can tell us about the great things shenavu mimakor haemet, which also come from a source of truth. And he says like this, and I've underlined it: klal gadol hu b'maorat muvim b'tanah. The stories in the Bible, there's a rule: sheheim ahavim shleimut achat. There's a completeness there. Kol prat katan yesh lo erech machria. There are small details, but they have a value in the development of the whole story. Im l'ra'a, im l'tova, sometimes for the bad, sometimes for the good. And here we have the same thing, he says, with the birth of David HaMelech. In the end of the day, the book of Ruth is about King David. And in order to understand how this all came about, the Novi, Shmuel, will record the most mundane and small things you could ever imagine. Ruth had this to eat, and Boaz said this, and they had these conversations which don't seem to be very inspiring, at the beginning at least. And what's going on? Why are we having all this information? We want to know. David is descending from here, and this is the way it was, and period. That's the end of the story. Says Rabbi Leibowitz so beautifully, he says, no, in the small stuff, in the way that they talk to each other, the way they related to each other, the way that they behave with each other, and the way that Boaz behaves in society, the way that Ruth looks after her mother-in-law, within those very mundane actions is contained the whole secret, the whole source of the future of Mashiach. Unbelievable. And I read this, and it's so precious, it's so beautiful what he's saying, that sometimes Mashiach is born out of the small actions, not out of the big actions. All right, I know we've got to have Gog and Magog, whatever that means, but I don't know, whatever that means. And there's all these different dire predictions and everything else, but to build Mashiach, to build it and make it come about, can really, we're all doing it the whole time. We're making these things happen in our own way, by doing a good action, by speaking nicely, whatever it may be, something which brings that little light into the world to make the world a holier place. Yeah.
Ovas,
Shabonim, yeah, and there's a lot more. He may very well I cut and paste over here, so I'm just bringing the Nakuda because it's so beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful idea. The idea that in the smallness, in the small deeds that we're going to read about, are contained the greatest, greatest consequences. And this is something that we just, maybe in life we know this, but it's good to be reminded about this from time to time. I don't want to go through more of that, but if you want to hold on to this and look at it for yourselves, please do, because as I said, this is precious. What this commentary on Sefer Rut is fabulous. Rab Leibowitz, as I said last week, also Rab Bachrach, that we're going to talk about a bit again this evening. Both of them wrote on the Book of Ruth in a way which is spectacular. It's another way to describe it. Alright, so with that kind of introduction, let's look at chapter 2. I have no idea what page the books are
at.
86 in the small Megillah, and if you've got the big one, it's near the back. That's all I can say. 1200 and something, whatever page it is. Around the Haftarah number. 1200 and something. Alright, so listen to this. Chapter 2. Ula Naomi, and we read it Muda. There was a relative to Naomi. Remember, Naomi's come back and she's been in she's in a depression, Mara, she wants to be called bitter. We spoke about this last week. They're there at the beginning of the harvest, of the barley harvest, right? And we know the scene. And they're living in Beit Lechem, which we mentioned and we'll mention again, is the territory of the tribe of Yehuda. So they're with the family. All right, nowadays, or rather, let's say, you know, when I grew up in London, I lived near my uncles, and we all lived near to each other, and I imagine it was like that here. Nowadays, families are spread out all over the place. I came to America to be near my kids, so they're now living in Houston, Texas. That's the United States. That's the way it works, you know, and I accept that. But as my wife says, it's not Israel, so I suppose it's a bit closer, but not much closer. And whatever, you know, nowadays we're spread out, but the family would essentially, certainly in the days of biblical time, would be living close to each other, and obviously there'll be a support system. Now, does Naomi get the support system? The answer at the beginning is no. She really does not get it, and you'll see how it goes over here. Chapter 2, verse 1. Naomi muda liisha. There was a relative, Rashi says, karov, and Rashi gives you that whole family description. Ish gibor chayim. A man of great strength. So he was known as a shtark. He was a very strong man. But again, does it mean strong in the physical sense? Does it mean someone, Rashi, the Targum says, takif ba'oraita, a man of great Torah knowledge. That's gibachayil, what it means over here. And the word gibachayil obviously reminds us, or brings to our mind, eshet chayil, in fact, which is a description not only which we read on Shabbat in the evening, but Friday night, but we also have Ruth being described by Boaz as an Eshet Chayim. So you've got a Gibor Chayim marrying an Eshet Chayim. So in the end, it's going to turn out good. But you'll see. Who is he? Mishpachat Elimelech. He's part of the family of Elimelech. Ushmo Boaz. And his name is Boaz. And the rabbis comment, Ushmo Boaz, that way round, shows that he's a tzaddik. When they talk about Goliath, it says Goliath Shmo. Goliath is his name. Here it says, Ushmo Boaz. His name is Boaz. And the rabbis say you have that with David, Ushmo David, and you have it with a number of famous characters. And here, with Boaz, it's there to emphasize this was a righteous individual. Now, bet. We're going to be asking ourselves the whole time, this title, Rutamovia, doesn't leave her. Right? She's still known as the Moabite lady. Ruth the Moabite says to Naomi, and they are in a particularly difficult situation, not only, let's use the word financially or materially, but they're also emotionally very, very difficult situation. Ruth and Naomi both come from very noble backgrounds. Ruth came from the Malchut of Moab, and Naomi was really sort of one, you know, married to Elimelech, who was the one of the great men of his generation, till he left. Sorry?
Orpah didn't come from.
And Orpah also, but Orpah went back. She returned to it. The problem here is that the solution to their problem is to adopt a style which is going to be admitting to their poverty, admitting to their dire circumstance. They're going to line up with all the people at the soup kitchen, and or the equivalent. And for Ruth, or rather, even to ask Naomi, should she do this, is very difficult, because she knows that there is a certain level of pride here, of self-pride, which, you know, she doesn't want to harm, doesn't want to offend her mother-in-law more than, or hurt her more than she's been hurt already. So this is a very delicate question, Pasuk Bet. But Toma Ruta Moavia Naomi, so Ruth the Moabite says to Naomi, and again, Moabite in the sense that she's still considered to be Michutz Machaneh, as far as the people of Yehuda are concerned. She's Ruta Moavia, so they haven't come to their aid. They haven't come to help them. Elachana, she says, I'll go, I'll sadeh, v'alakta b'shibolim, achar Hashem tzachem be'inah. And what I will do, I'll go in into the field to take the sheaves of wheat. There is a halakha, what is called leket, or shikha, depends, there's different definitions here. What they used to do is they used to cut the wheat and used to leave behind for the poor to pick up the ends and use to make bread and whatever they needed. And she was going to join that particular line of people to collect. Achashem tzachem beinam. And I hope to find favor in his eyes. Now again, the question is, what exactly is she referring to here? Rashi says, Achar mi Hashem tzachem beinav. And I hope that somebody there will be favorable to me. She's not saying who. She's not yet making a statement of who she's looking to help them. At this point, all we know that Boaz exists. She's having the conversation with her mother-in-law. Should I go? And Vatomelo lechi biti. You can see that their relationship is becoming stronger. She's now calling her Biti, my daughter. All right? And she's saying to her, go. You know, Ruth is very polite and very sensitive to her mother-in-law's plight, and she asks permission. So what happened? Gimel. Vatelech vatavo vatalake basadeh. And think about it, the order of the words is very strange. Vatelech, she went, vatavo, and she came back, vatalake basadeh, and she gleaned in the field. So wait a minute. If it says that she went and she came back and she gleaned, surely it's the wrong way around. It should be she went, she gleaned, and then she came back. Right? So the rabbis are very perplexed by this. What does it mean? She goes, then she comes back, and then she goes and picks up the produce. What's going on here? So again, Rashi explains that what did she do? And I'll read this to you because it's very beautiful. It gives you a bit of an idea of what Ruth was like. Matzina b'midrash. This is Reb Lipowitz, the small actions. That's why I think that introduction is precious. It looks like something small, kleinikain, but it's not. And I'll read the Rashi. Matzina b'midrash, Ruth. We find in the Midrash. Ad shelo ozla ata. Before she went back, got there, she came back. What does that mean? Shehu omer v'tavo v'cha v'tzalakeit, ela shaita mesamenet adrachim. What happened was she was trying to find the field of the mishpacha. So she went to a certain place and she marked the path. Kodem shenichnasa l'sadeh, before she went into the field. She made like a sign on a tree or something like that. V'olacha. And then she went there, Uba v'chazra le'ir, she came back to the city, kedei la'asot simanim v'tziyunim, to make signs, shelo titeh b'shvilim, that she shouldn't get lost. She was very, very careful about where she was going. She realized that her mother-in-law was relying on her. And the worst thing that she could do is start going, as they say in Israel, yasha, yasha, and then turn left. You know, you've ever asked directions in Israel, it's one of those wonderful experiences. It really doesn't get you anywhere, but it's fun. And you know, that's what we don't want. She wants to make sure that everything is marked, that she knows where she's going. So back to the Pasuk Gimel. Vatelech vatavo. She went and then she came back and she tried to find the field. And she went again and she came back and she tried to find another field. The one that she realized, she hoped that would be the place which would be the best for her. And eventually, vatelake basadeh, she found the right place. So that just gives you, again, as I said, the small print. But it's very precious because she doesn't want to get lost. She doesn't want her mother-in-law to worry about her, that she's not coming home or whatever. And what happened, back to the pasuk, Achareya Kotsrim, and she was following the guys who were cutting the harvest, the harvesters, Vayika Mikreha, and it happened, and this is an expression which we don't normally find, certainly not a Novi, alright? Normally Mikre is the word that is used in the sense of a coincidence. But in this case, it's not a coincidence. But I think, there's a kind of idea. Maybe in her mind, it was by chance. But of course, the Novi is saying nothing here is by chance. Chalkata sadeh leBoaz. And eventually she found the field of Boaz. Asher mishpachat Elimelech mishpocha. Finally, she found the family plot. V'hinei Boaz ba mibet lechem pasuk dalos. So Boaz is arriving from Bethlehem. V'yomer lekotzrim Hashem imachem. And again, why are we told all of this small detail, which doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything? As I said, there is a discussion in Chazal that this was the day when Boaz and his Beit Din came out with the pronouncement that we should greet each other in the name of God. This was a society we know where, the standards, the moral standards were low. They were not the way they should be, and there were a lot of problems. There was not a sense of helping each other. There wasn't a sense of chesed. We spoke about this already last week. So one of the ways they wanted to improve the circumstance was by greeting each other in the name of God. And this is exactly what's going on here. This is why the detail is mentioned, because it was a new halacha. And of course the people responded, Yivarecha Hashem, may God bless you. Right? You know, you greeted us in the name of God, we're going to greet you with a bracha in the name of Hashem. Which again, seems to be a small detail, but is really a big detail. It's very interesting. And at this point, Boaz does something very odd. Vayomer Boaz the Na'aron. Boaz says to his lad, who he's got some sort of young lad helping him, Hanitzav al kotzrim, Lemi Hana'ara Hazot. Who is this girl? Now you'll say to me, you know, is he sitting on the street corner watching all the young ladies go past? What's he doing? It's very strange, and the Chazal are very perplexed by this. And again, I'll read Rashi's question. V'chidarko shel Boaz lishol banashim? Does Boaz ask after the women? Is that what it is? And we know from Chazal that he wasn't a young man. This was according to tradition here. He's 80 years old, right? And in fact, when he marries Ruth, they're only together for one night and he dies the next day, which is an unbelievable addition to the story. It's an amazing story. But putting that to one side, what's he doing asking about Ruth? So Rashi says something again, it's in the small print, but how precious it is. Ela divrei, I'll just read the Rashi. Divrei tzniyut v'chochma ra'aba. He saw that she was modest and she was smart. What did he see? Shtei shibalim likta, she gathered two of the sheaves. Shlosha eina likta, but not three, right? I suppose, in other words, not to become too obvious that she's taking, you know, from the food. She didn't want to stand out, you know, be too, greedy, all right? And that's point number one. And vahita malaketet omdot meumad v'shochvot miyushab kedei shelo tishche. Unbelievable. That she didn't want to behave in such an immodest way that she would bend over and, I don't know, people would look and they'll start, you know, sort of making sort of comments about, you know, whether she looks pretty or not, whatever. She used to gather by sitting down. She would actually, when she saw that there was a sheaf to pick up, she would go by it, she would sit down and behave very modestly, pick the thing, gather the sheaf, and then stand up. Unbelievable. And Boaz was watching her and he couldn't believe it. Who is this girl? You know, I mean, Beis Yaakov, thank you very much, but this is unbelievable. This is way beyond. What is she doing? So,
you didn't say who is this girl. It says, who does she belong to? Lemi
Hanara Hazan.
Where did she learn this behavior from?
Yeah, where did she get this behavior from? And of course, what's the comparison? Now, this is why I'm going to put you on the spot, right? Who said the same thing in another story later on in history? Right? When he meets this young man, right? Or rather, not that he meets him, he knows him already, but he is overwhelmed by the impression. Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech turns around and says to Avner, Lemi Hanar Hazeh. Lemi. Same question. Who is this young man? When he sees David, you know, destroy Goliath, cut off his head and then bring the head to the king, he turns around and says to the people around him, Lemi, who is this person? And of course, the big question there is, he knows who he is. He's been playing music for him for I don't know how long already. So it's in other words, Lemi, as you rightly said, is not who, but Lemi. Where is this guy coming from? Shaul asked the question about David because he saw the elements of kingship, because it's after Shaul is told he's not going to continue to be the king. Here, again, the same question. Boaz sees in this behavior of Ruth the most tremendous sense of special care and attention, not only in terms of the way she's gathering, the amount that she's gathering, but the way that she does it. She is very, very careful to behave in a modest way. And Lemi, the same question which comes up later is already asked here, who is this? Where is she getting this from? Who is she? Where does she come from? What is going on here? That's Boaz's question. Yeah, he's not asking about who she is, but he wants to know, as they say, you know, what is she about? What is she really about? Pasuk va, vayan hanar va nitzav el hakotzrim. Of course, this young lad was a bit taken aback, because as far as he was concerned, the old man is asking about this young girl. So he turns around and says, vayomar nara moviyahi. This is the Moabite girl, famous girl. We all know about her. Hashavaim Naami Mistei Moav, who came back from Stei Moav. And remember, we said last week Stei Moav was the place which was not firm. It wasn't. It was a place of change. It wasn't an established place. When they come back, they come to Beit Lecha, to a house. Their field as opposed to the house. So this is the girl who came back with Naami from those fields, and that's who she is. And of course, he doesn't even know her name. Vatoma, and she said, and of course now they are repeating the conversation. Vatoma alaktano vasafti bamarim. She said she wanted to come and gather some of the sheaves, achareya kotsrim, following these men who were harvesting. Vatavo vataamod, she came and she stood, me'aza bokanata. She's been here since the early part of the morning. She hasn't stopped. Ze shivta habayit ma'ad. She hardly went home. Didn't even sit in the house at all. She was here the whole day. So Boaz hears this and he begins to have, for want of a better word, a conscience. Because there's no question about it that he must be feeling pretty terrible. He's a special guy. And here he sees this couple struggling, that Ruth is looking after her mother-in-law in such an intense way, and in such a beautiful way. And at the same time, she does not have the legitimacy. She's known as the Moabiyah, not even by her name. As far as this lad is concerned, she's the Moabite. Right, as you say in Israel today, the chutznik, right, the one who comes from the outside. And that's a problem. And look at Boaz's response, because again, in the small detail, there is everything here. Pasuk chet, vayomer Boaz el Rut, he now has a conversation with her. He engages her in conversation because he wants to find out what is she really all about. And he says to her, and vayomer is always rakaz, softly. Right, Vayidaba is always to speak harshly. Vayoma to speak softly. And he has to connect. And he says, this is why this story is so beautiful. Oh, it's precious. He says, Halo Shamad Biti. So he's calling Biti. Alright, we already saw Biti from Naomi. And now he also calls her Biti. Have you not heard my daughter, Al Telchi Luko Basadeh? Acher, don't go to any other field. V'gam lo tavuri mizeh, don't go away from here. V'ko tidbakinim narutai, be together with my girls, the ones who are collecting the produce. You'll be okay. Stay here. And of course, he's making a gesture to her, which we understand is a very important gesture because of the familial connection that he understands exists. Now, of course, her reaction. If you're Ruth and you feel that you're outside the camp, what are you going to say? And he says more than that. Look what he says, Pasuk 10. Einayach basadeh asher yitzarun. Keep your eyes on the field where they're harvesting. Go after them. I've commanded the lads not to go near you. In other words, don't think that you're in a situation where your modesty will be compromised. It won't be. If you're thirsty, go to get some drink from the vessels, and drink. Whatever they give you, whatever they have, the water they will give you. And that is his gesture of chesed. Now, at this point, it's almost like the story of Eliezer waiting for Rivka to do something special. She's waiting for the reaction from Boaz, and she can't believe it. So what does she do? Yud. Vatipol al paneh. Vatishtachu al. Remember Eliezer, what does he do when he meets Rivka? He falls on his face. He's praising God. Baruch Hashem, yom yom. It's happened, right? I've met the wife of Yitzhak, I'm fulfilling my mission. And he bows down, and Ruth does the same thing. Vatipol al paneh, vatishtachu al. So she bows down to the ground. Vatome elam, madua. Madua is a very strong word. Madua is the word you use in Hebrew today when you really, why with a capital W. All right? Lama is usually the word that we use for why. Madua.
Moshe said it. Madua lo. He said it to Aaron. Madua, you didn't eat the katas.
Yeah. And it's a very strong word. Madua is a word that, you know, you've really got to throw your hands in the air. Madua. So she says, why? Matzati chayim beinecha laki reini v'anochi nochriya. Wow. And she is coming out with something. It's the question, does she really know what she's saying? She says, I'm a foreigner. Nochriya, nochri. Right? Shalos sani goy, we say in the morning. Some say the bracha, shalos sani nochri. Okay? Nochri means someone from outside the camp. Now, what is so interesting is his response. Vayan Boaz, because clearly she's saying something which may have within it, even though she's not going to criticize him, chas v'shalom, she feels so overwhelmed by his kindness, she says, why are you even bothering me? I'm a foreigner, I'm not even one of you guys. So at this point, Boaz understands that there is a wrong here which has to be put right. Vayan Boaz vayom elam. Boaz answered and said to her, and I always find vayan vayom means he thought it through. Not just to respond, you know, straight away, but vayan vayom. He's got to think it through and then respond. And he says, Hugeid hugadli, it's been told to me, kol asher asit et chamotech, what you did for your mother-in-law, acharei mot ishech, after your husband died, But Tazvi Avich Vimech, and you left your father and mother behind. Look how he puts it in such Jewish terms. You left your mother and father. He doesn't talk about the king and queen, or he doesn't talk about the enemies of Israel. He says, in the most personal way, you left your family, the Eretz Moladatech, and the land of your birth. And you went to a land which you did not know previously. Rav Bachrach says, what a comparison to the test, the Nisayon of Avraham Avinu. And I'm not going to go through it, but he makes this fabulous comparison linguistically in terms of ideas that Avraham was also put into a situation. He's going to a land, he doesn't know where it is. He's told by God, Lech lecha me'artzecha, go to this land, which I will show you. And Ruth, essentially, according to what Boaz says to her, has gone through the same Nisayon. She didn't know Eretz Israel. She knew where it was geographically, but she hadn't been to Israel. They're on their side of the Jordan. They don't come over. So she has gone through this incredible test. And Boaz recognizes it. Now, what is so interesting is the Targum. And the Targum, I'll just read it to you and I'll read it out. What Boaz is actually saying here. The Targum Yonatan, this is an Aramaic translation, not like the Onkelos, it's a bit more midrashic in terms of what he says, but I'll just read it to you. He says, Vatev Boaz Vamarlo. Boaz says to her, because what is he really saying? She said, Nochriya, I am foreign. So what is Boaz really saying to her? So he says like this, we'll just read this. He says, Itchavo itchavali al meima chakimaya. He says, I've just been informed by the sages, the Kad Gazar Hashem, when God made the decree of not marrying Moabites, Lo Gazar Al Nukvaya. There was no decree made on the women. He's letting her know that she is kosher. Wow. Nukhrani, she says, Nukhriya, I am foreigner. He's saying to her, no, you're not. You are part of Am Yisrael. This is halacha, which makes you absolutely part of the Jewish people. And not only that, but the fact that you left your family and you left everything behind and you've come and you've supported your mother-in-law, I can't get over this. You are a very special individual. Wow. And this is the whole background to what's going on here. And again, as Rav Levitz says, in the small actions, in the word, in the kind word that he's saying to her, he's giving her a whole world of encouragement. You'd bet. And we're going to finish the chapter. Yishalem Hashem Polech. And he says, may God give you your reward, and may you be rewarded from the God of Israel, because you're part of us. You're one of us. You've come under the wings of the Almighty. You've converted. And she says, you have comforted me. She says, my master, you've given me strength. Wow. You spoke to my heart. You cry when you read this. I mean, it's the most. This is one of the most precious conversations in the whole of the Bible. And she says, "V'anochi lo eyakachat shivchotech." I'm not even like one of your shvachot, like just like a girl that works, sort of in your kitchen or whatever. You've said to me, you've given me strength. I'm not now just staff, as they say. I'm not just someone on the payroll. Vayomelo Boaz, the eita ochel, and he tells her what to do when she needs food. At the time of food, gashi halom ve'achal min alechem. Go and take the bread. V'taval pitech b'chometz and dip it in the vinegar. And the rabbis say, why is he telling her this? Because it's hot. And apparently, dipping bread in vinegar cools you off. Who knew? All right, I've never tried that in Israel, but maybe next time I go in the summer, my little bottle of vinegar with a bit of bread and see if it works. I probably won't, but well, who knows? Maybe it'll keep you cooler. Vateshev mitzad hakotzrim. So she sits down next to the people cutting the sheaves. Vayitzpat ba'al kolin. She takes the corn. Vatochal vatispa vatota. And she had svia. Svia means vachalta v'savata. She ate and she was satisfied. And this is a sign which the suggestion is till now, she had no satisfaction from what she was eating because she was in a state of distress. Look what's going on with my mother-in-law and everything around me, and the family is not really supporting me. Here comes Boaz. He changes the whole situation. The small things. Pasuk tedva, v'takom lelaket. So she goes together by itzav Boaz et narav lemor. Now Boaz says to his lads, gam beino amorim telaket lo tachlimor. You guys don't put her to shame. Even if she gathers a little bit extra, don't make a fuss. And he says, leave her behind. a little bit extra as well. Don't take all the droppings, as it were, of the corn or whatever. Vazavtem velikta velotkar, but don't get angry with her. Let her gather. Vatalakei basadad Aaron, she did it. Vatachbot et asher liketa, she put together everything that she gathered. Vayhi kefas sarim, and it was a lot. An ephah is a big amount. I don't know what it is in terms of what we would say, probably a few sacks of barley, which was going to be very, very pleasant for her. She goes back to the city. She's not just going back. She's vatisa. Tisa, the idea of being carried along. She's skipping. She's dancing back to the city. Think of it. She's you know, this is like that she was given the mission impossible and she achieved it. She's coming home with much more than she ever expected. Plus having had a conversation with the uncle, you know, the mishpocha. And she's vatissa, the idea of carried along, right? To be raised. Vatavoha iv, atera chamota et asher likena. And her mother-in-law saw everything. And of course, we haven't even said a word about Naomi. She's sitting at home, she's waiting, she doesn't know what's going to be. And she's waiting and waiting and waiting. Where's Ruth? She hasn't come home, and it's getting dark, and you know, shkia, and what's going on. And then Ruth turns out with this whole bag of barley. Vatotsei vatitela tasheo tira misava. And she even gave her what she had left over from what she'd eaten. You know, she took everything with her, and Ruth, Naomi, was overwhelmed. Vatomela chamuta, efole katayom. Vana seat, where did you go? How did you do this? Yehi makirek baruchan. It must have been someone who gave you, recognized you. May he be blessed. But tagged lechamota, and you can see how what's in the heart of Naomi. Naomi hakara satov the whole time, even on something as basic as this. But tagged lechamota, so she told her mother-in-law, Eita she'asati imo. What happened? Vatom eshemo isha she'asiti imo hayom Boaz. He is the man, Boaz. Boaz, in him is strength. Okay, interesting name. Vatoma Naomi lekalata, and at this point she's talking. No, now she's talking kalata. You can see, as I said, the relationship is getting stronger. Now it's kala, it's this idea of very close. The daughter-in-law, not just now the Moaviyah anymore, she's the kalata. She's very close to her. She says to her, Baruch Hu Hashem Asher Lo Zav Chasdo. In other words, she mentions the name of God. She's become revived here, Naomi. She says that God never left His kindness at the chayim, at ameitim, with the living or with the dead. God remembered us. And not only that, but the man you're talking to is the one who can redeem us. And that, of course, is something, as I said, we'll talk about Mitzvah Hashem on the next shir. At this point, Moaviyah appears again. Question is why? You'll see in a minute. Ruth the Moabite. You know, as the whole discussion about the Cheta Eger. The big question, how can they do the sin of the golden calf so soon after Har Sinai? And one of the answers, which is this famous comment that you can take the Jews out of Egypt, much harder to take Egypt out of the Jews. All right? And Ruth, as precious and as committed as she is, there are still tendencies, Moabite tendencies, which are going to take time to bring out of her. And look what happens here. Kafalam. Vatoma Ruta Moaviyah. Remember, she was told to go with the girls to be with them. She says, Gam ki amare lai im hana'arim. She says, oh, I'm going to go with the boys. Now that, of course, for Ruth's society was no big deal, right? Modesty was not an issue for those guys. But now in her new situation, what was going on here? It's not even that she said it on purpose, but it still revealed that there's more work to be done. As you'll see, this is a segue into the next chapter, as we'll talk about Mitzvah Hashem next week. And she says that, I'm going with the Na'arim. Ashalitid Bakin, he said, go with those young men. Ad im kiluata katsira sheli to finish the harvest. Vatomen ami a Ruth kalata. Now she's talking to Ruth kalata again, not Ruth amobia, because she puts her right. Tov biti, my daughter, it's good. Ki teitzim na'arot. Go with his girls. All right. She points out to Ruth, you know, at this point your commitment is getting stronger. Understand that what you just said, it may have been, as you say, a Freudian slip, but it's significant. Go with the girls. They won't touch you in any other field. In other words, even if you go to another field, they'll leave you alone. And she got the message. She is amazing, this girl. This is the grandmother of King David. She's got to be amazing. Right? The Bubba. Therefore, she went with the lad, the girls, to gather. At Kolot Ketzer HaSorim, U Ketzer HaChitim, the end of the harvest, and she's with her. The rabbis say 3 months, day in and day out, she went to gather the crops. Does Boaz say anything more to her during those 3 months? We're not told. Nothing. We're not told whether, you know, and one assumes that, you know, he was around. Maybe he's away on business. I don't know. He went to Eilat for a few days. Who knows what he did? But in the meantime, she is going in and out, and Naomi is waiting. She's waiting for that final shtempel, you know, that final sense of redemption, which will be when, obviously, Boaz proposes. Okay, she's waiting to get that picture sort of in the album. But at this point in time, it's not happening. We're at a crossroads over here. And we feel the crossroads, and this is again very much part of what's going on in chapter 3, where we see Naomi being so proactive is kind of scary. Alright, this is a Shadchan's nightmare, what she suggests. I'm not even going to sort of tell you about it. Read ahead. Read the next chapter. If those of you haven't read this before, I'm sure you all have. You'll know what I'm referring to, and we'll have to deal with this Mitzvah Shem next week. As I said at the beginning, what is so amazing here, just a little item here about the food, a little item here about the sort of pleasant conversation, a little point here, a little point there, biti, kalati. But it's so beautiful, because this is really what it's about. It's about this idea of rebuilding, of not just rebuilding the whole concept of chesed in Klal Yisrael, but establishing the foundations for the future. If the Jewish people are going to sort of make it in the world, they're going to have to be outstanding. They're going to have to make an impression. They're going to have to do something unique. And we know that one of the things that we're famous for is the chesed, the kindness, the institutions that we've been blessed with over the years. Every major community in Europe, and I've seen the buildings, had hospitals, Jewish hospitals, wherever you went. And we're not talking nowadays where, thank God, there are many philanthropists that can sponsor Long Island Jewish and all the rest of them. But you went to Minsk, there was a Jewish hospital. You went to Warsaw, maybe there was a few Jewish hospitals. I saw the one in Krakow. The buildings are still there. A lot of the buildings, you know, the Germans, a lot of those buildings were not destroyed. And it's one of those things that is in our blood. And this is where it's all coming from. This is discovery, self-discovery. The Book of Ruth is a voyage of self-discovery. I think I can end on that particular thought. Just one comment, please.
Boaz is 80 years old. He obviously knows that he's related to Naomi.
Yeah.
So why is he suggesting that Ruth go through this gleaming, this collecting, stick around with the guy, stick around with Ruth? Why not just take her in or take Naomi?
Yeah, it's delicate. Because this halakha of Moaviyah is only just... It's 3 months. He's waiting. There is a delicate situation here. That, you know, he doesn't want people to be choshed. You know, we're living in a society. This world that we're talking about over here is not an easy world to live in. There have been a lot of tribal issues. We know what the period of judges was. And I think Boaz is behaving here with the most... greatest delicacy, sensitivity towards them. Give it more time. You know, he's not yet ready to make any sort of commitment to them. He wants to help them. And in that help, as he starts, just by allowing them to sort of come in and to get more connected, it's a process of reconnection. And it's not going to happen overnight. You know, this is the uncle that you never spoke to. So you made shalom. So when you made shalom with him, you know, what then do you do? How do you deal with this? Do you invite him around every week for the next 3 years? You know, you don't. You'll see him again in 6 months' time, or maybe at the next wedding. And, you know, it's a process of healing. And I think that's what's going on over here. I think that with what the people were feeling so negative towards Naomi at the beginning of the chapter, and by the end of the chapter, there's already a bridge which is being made, but it's slow. It's a process. And there's a three-month situation over here, which will be brought to a head with the story in chapter 3. That's about the best I can suggest. They were away for 10 years, yeah. And the very fact that they went and the way that they went and everything about it, people were still feeling very, very bitter about their behavior.
Do you know what the time interval was between the death of her husband, Ruth's husband, and their return?
And their return, we're not told, but when one assumes they died pretty soon, the whole thing of getting married and whatever, they didn't seem to be married very long. We speculate within the first year or two, it must have happened. The marriage and then the death was pretty soon afterwards. It's a pretty amazing story. The small print. Never ignore the small print. I suppose that's a good for a lawyer. That's a good message. But it's true in life. To be continued, Bezrat Hashem, next week. Thank you very much. Thank you.